Ramping up your business? The time is near. You've given it heart. Now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law, a full-service intellectual property law firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, founder of Gear Media Studios, podcast coach, co-host of the Passage to Profit show, and chief marketing officer at Gearhart Law.
Do you even like know who you are sometimes when you wake up in the morning? Well, today we're coming at it from all sides, from rock music to company growth experts to really good booze. Welcome to Passage to Profit, the road to entrepreneurship, where we talk with entrepreneurs and celebrities about their business journeys.
I am so excited to introduce our dynamic duo here, Joe Scaretta and Moses Carrasco. They have masonmade.co. Welcome to the show and tell us all about what you're doing.
Masonmade is an operational holding company that invests in businesses that focus on visibility and specialty trade services supporting infrastructure across the U.S. 10 to 15 businesses over the next 2 to 3 years, and we're focusing on disrupting the facility management space nationwide.
And you work in certain areas of industry, right?
We do. So we focus in data capture on site, leveraging technology, but we also focus on, and we've heard a lot thrown around over the recent years, we focus on blue collar trades. So we focus on sprinkler, fire protection, we focus on material handling, if you think about conveyor belts, anything that moves materials in a warehouse or in a retail setting. And then we also focus on elevator and escalators, right? Who hasn't walked up to a broken elevator somewhere, right? So it's a problem that's not going away. And touching on what we touched on earlier, AI is not going to change it either,
no.
Right? So it's a safe industry to work in and to leverage AI to enhance.
I do have to say, though, I saw on TikTok the other day this machine that was creating a concrete floor. It was a robot, and it's like one guy is just watching the robot go, and it's moving it back and forth, and you're like thinking, well, I never thought anything like this could be automated, but, you know, all sorts of stuff is being automated now. So how did you guys get into this business, and where did you start? Were you originally in the building trades? Was that your profession? And then you kind of grew out of that into this kind of complex business organization?
We have this unique entrepreneurial story. I'll say unique, but I'm sure there's a million others out there like it. But we'll start with unique. We met at a small retail construction company, call it 20-plus years ago. I came from the retail operations side, grew up in big box retail. Moses came from the contractor side. And we worked there for 8 months together. And we started to learn about this industry for carpentry and plumbing and handyman. Moses was a general contractor by trade. And then we found out all these national brands really wanted the services that we offered. And so we worked with this small company. We started to learn the business. We started to run our own projects, service calls, plumbing, handyman, carpentry, everywhere across the country. So then we said, you know what? We're making $26,000 a year. We weren't getting our bonuses. We weren't able to transcend and have uncapped income. And so we said, you know what? We started meeting at lunchtime and looking at staples for desks. And we said, let's go out and start our own thing. I'll never forget, the story I always say is Moses picked me up in his red Honda Civic, and we drove into the sunset and started our first company.
And now it's a Ferrari, right? It's a red Ferrari.
So did you just quit corporate jobs and start?
We did. So we both came from the corporate side. We worked at this small company. And then after we started to learn about this industry that we never knew existed, leveraging our skills and backgrounds from retail and then from skilled trades, we said, let's just start our own company.
So what was it like going from the small company environment to your own business?
Scary. It was scary. You have the comfort of getting a check every week to moving into an environment where you are finding a way to pay yourself. And for the first 6 months or 8 months, we didn't pay ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. We paid all the other bills first. So it was scary, but it was also exhilarating and exciting, right? I think one of the cool things about being an entrepreneur that I found is being able to build a business around a problem in an industry. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. There was so much opportunity, and everybody needed the services we had to offer.
But you know what? There's like a gazillion contractors out there, right? And they're all providing different services. They would all love to provide services to Walmart or Target. How did you guys kind of rise above that and leverage it into a much bigger operation?
We used our skills that we acquired both in our early careers, right? I had the background of how to work in corporate America and retail operations environments and big box retail, starting in Sports Authority and Gap, you know, in my younger mm-hmm. years. And then, so I knew how to really get the messaging out from a marketing and PR standpoint mm-hmm. internally and from a development standpoint. Moses came with a skilled trades background. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to leverage that into understanding what businesses needed and how we could build a subcontractor network, pre-vetting contractors, because we've all had those contractor disasters where someone's given you a bid, they haven't shown up, or they've shown up and charged you a million change orders. So we got to the crux of understanding how the contractors worked and then built our own pre-vetted vendor network or contractor network with contractors across the country in our first business.
So you actually came up with a network with reliable, dependable contractors, and that was a key to your success.
People that showed up on time, that knew what they were doing, that were properly licensed, properly insured, and then any of the questions that we needed to ask them, right? As a national company, you want to be able to ask really pointed trade questions, right? You don't want it to be a simple dispatch call center. There's so many of them out there.
Right.
So we trained our people, and Moses spent a lot of time training our teams on what's the subject matter knowledge in each trade that we need to know so we can make sure that the customer is getting the right price and the right scope of work and they're getting the right service across the country.
I do want to go back to something, because how could you not take a paycheck for 8 months?
There was a lot of peanut butter jelly sandwiches and there was a lot of tuna sandwiches. And that's a real story. We didn't take a paycheck. And I will say that if you start a business, if you're only focused on the profit, there's a very big likelihood that you might close your door sooner than later.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what you need to see to feel that there's momentum, it's going to create a pretty major fear factor in your mind, right? So you have to say, we're growing. No matter what's happening, volume is coming in. The profit will come later. If volume isn't coming in, maybe you should second guess it, right? But over time, right, as volume comes in, the profit will follow.
But then what did you live on? Did you have savings? Did you have spouses that supported you?
No, we started, I sold the condo in Florida. I was really lucky. I was 19 years old. My uncle convinced me to sell a condo. I had bought it for $27,000 and I sold it for $80,000. So we had $50,000, something along those lines to start the business. So we had something, you know, but I was borrowing $100 from him when he had it. He was borrowing me $50 from
me. Same
$100. And that kind of happened for about 6 months. And I would say we were in a situation where he was living at his parents' home, and I was living in a very, you know, economical apartment. So we were making ends meet.
That's sort of like the traditional entrepreneurial story.
So
when did you realize that the business was going to make it and that you would eventually turn a profit?
I would say after the first 6 or 8 months, we started to break that couple $100,000 range. We started to get into a situation where we landed another national client. So the first two clients we started with were Claire's, Girls Jewelry. Everybody knows Claire's Jewelry.
Yeah.
And we started with Sprint Nextel. And then we landed Nine West. So we had these three national accounts. And we broke over $300,000 or $400,000 in revenue. And then all of a sudden, there started to be a little bit of money left at the end of the month to pay Moses and I.
Those are big accounts, though.
And we traded in our peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for Big Mac.
So what were you doing for those stores?
We were acting as a single point of contact for all their maintenance needs for their fleet of locations across the country. So if a cabinet door fell off a hinge at a 9 West, we would get that call. Or if a Claire store needed to get renovated, new carpet, new flooring, new paint, anywhere in the country, we would get that call, too. And so we had this business that we were doing all these trade services across the broader platform that we were building on. I'll never forget, I was a salesperson. I would say the development side, right? Moses came to me. He's like, hey, if we're ever going to grow, and this is where the trust comes in from a partnership standpoint, we need another sales guy. And back then, the ego was, we just started. I'm like, I could be the only sales guy. I got this. And it became that lunge, that leap of faith of like, you know what? Maybe we should get another sales guy. And we did. It was an ex-client that we were working with, came in, never sold before, and he was one of the bigger drivers in growing our business with us from a sales perspective, myself, him, and a really core group of people that came in.
My first question would be, why do you think that the contracting world, the general contractors and everything, it's one of the most vilified, late, they're always late, you're always over budget, it always takes longer than you think. Why do you think that's always the case, or how did you guys fix that so that's not an issue when you have to, oh, the carpet's going to take 2 weeks and it takes 3 months? Like, how do you get past that stigma?
I think we're still in it. Okay? I mean, you can vet vendors. There's, you know, where people are going to be late. People are going to have accidents on the road. It's going to exist. But what I think the major issue is that most companies are hiring the same contractors. We all want the good contractors.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in demand. And we're living in a time where now the generation, the youth, does not want to swing a hammer.
Right.
They do not want to learn these trades. So it's compounding on the existing tradesmen that are qualified. Partnering with these tradesmen and helping them develop their companies as well has been a huge component for us, right? Making sure that they have the right tools, making sure that we give them enough business so they can grow, so they can partner with other organizations, or they could actually start expanding their footprint to hire additional qualified contractors.
We're talking to Joe Scaretta and Moses Carrasco with MasonMade.co.
I love this story because it says to me that doing a good job and doing things right still counts for something, and that if you can just be reliable and dependable and follow through, that your chances of success are pretty good, because there's so many people who don't.
I mean, it goes to the old adage of, you know, do the simple things really well and do what you say you're going to do, right?
Yeah.
We also have a real focus on establishing and really owning the communications, right? So setting the expectation of when a contractor is going to arrive on site, right? Now in our newer business, where we're focusing on sprinkler and we're focusing on fire protection, material handling, and vertical, you know, elevator, escalator, those trades in those areas, the clients are unhappy. They're not happy with the service they're getting. People aren't showing up on time. They're getting charged a lot of money. So it's really making sure we hold them accountable to show up when they say they're going to show up, setting the expectation of time windows versus saying, I'll be on site at 10 o'clock. We say between 10 and 12, right? We know that the contractor is going to run a little late, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to give that buffer, that window. And then really being able to give them, to Moses' point, the right scope of work that they're driving on site is really critical too. So many times people show up and they don't know what they're working on. And it's frustrating for the contractor too.
Mm-hmm. So now your business has kind of grown beyond that, right? Now you're working more as a partnering company and an advisor. You're working in industries where you're already familiar with the technology and you're helping companies grow. Tell us a little bit about that.
We are. So in our first two ventures, you know, we exited with private equity in our first two ventures on the skilled trades, more focused on carpentry and plumbing and general trade work. We've now fast forwarded to MasonMade. We are going and we're helping blue collar entrepreneurs and the sprinkler, fire protection, material handling, vertical trades. And we're helping them to either scale their businesses by adding operational infrastructure. We're helping them to add business development to be able to sell accounts nationwide. And we're also giving them just the expertise of how to grow and scale their business, where a lot of these folks are stuck in that $1 million range, you know, $2 million range. It's like, how do I go from 2 million to 10, right? And I think we're helping them to give them the unlocks to get that next.
So threshold. How do you get from a $2 million business to a $10 million business?
I think it differs for every company. I think for us, what we saw was investing in the operational infrastructure.
So adding, what does that mean? I mean, operate, it sounds kind of like a fancy term to me.
Of course. It's investing in the right positions in the company.
So the right people.
The right people. It's investing in the right technology. We've seen so many of these businesses are working off of spreadsheets still, right? So it's the right technology. It's an operating system or an accounting system that they don't have today. And then it's focusing on adding sales and development efforts, right? Adding a salesperson, because a lot of these owners and founders, they sell their businesses, but they're also managing and operating all the work they're bringing in. There's no scale there because they don't have the right folks in the right seats. So we're helping them to do that.
I think a sales team is really important. And we just we'll talk about it a little bit at the end, but we have a super sales guy at Gearhart Law. We don't really call him sales, but that's what it is. Anyway, and we just did training, marketing and sales training for the rest of the firm. He and I did it together because it is so important to any business. And you don't think about that as an entrepreneur, I don't think, as much. You think, I've got this great idea.
Well, I think if you're going to start a business, though, you really need to be able to sell.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're not the best, you have to have multiple skills. You have to be able to at least do sales and maybe some marketing. And then you have to also maybe do finance, or you have to be good at operations. You have to be like good at half the stuff that a business owner needs to do.
What kind of sales were you in before?
I sold photocopiers.
Right.
Yeah, I used to go door to door, make phone calls before I went to law school. Mm-hmm. I loved it. But, I always liked the sales process. But you have to be able to get business in the door somehow. If you can't do that, then the rest of the stuff doesn't matter. But eventually, you do want to get somebody who's, like, even better at it than you are, right? And for all the reasons you just said, because you're trying to wear too many hats, and you can only do so much, and you need to delegate to people who have strengths.
I think what we learned in scaling our first two businesses was investing in talent, investing in people that are smarter than you, that could add operational infrastructure or add operational support that could help us to, you know, again, elevate our sales and development, how we're marketing, what we're selling, what we're doing. And I think that was one of the biggest, you know, I would say leaps is investing in talent, maybe even smarter than you are in certain areas.
Well, I just wonder how these owners handle that, investing in people and then giving up responsibility and delegating it's got to be pretty stressful for them, right? If they've been doing it a certain way for a long time, they're like, oh, I'm not sure. This guy doesn't know the business. You know, why am I letting him do this?
It's scary for someone to give up control, especially inside their own company, for trades or services and things that they're used to and they're accustomed to. It's also their comfort zone, right? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing I've been doing for the last 5 or 10 years. And part of our approach when we talk to them is, in the last 5 or 10 years, how much have you been able to grow?
Pretty amazing that you've been able to actually find good contractors.
That's sort of like the holy grail of life, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. So how can people get a hold of you?
Go to our website, masonmade.co. Moses and I are both on there. You could also get us on LinkedIn. Our LinkedIn handle is through our companies. Easiest way to get us.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Passage to Profit is a nationally syndicated radio show appearing in 38 markets across the U.S.
In addition, Passage to Profit has also been recently selected by FeedSpot Podcasters Database as a top 10 entrepreneur interview podcast. Thank you to the P2P team, our producer Noah Fleischman, and our program coordinator Alicia Morrissey, our studio assistant Rissikat Busari, and our social media powerhouse Carolina Tabares. Look for our podcast tomorrow anywhere you get your podcasts. Our podcast is ranked in the top 3% globally. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, and on our YouTube channel. And remember, while the information on this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional first. Gearhart Law is here for your patent, trademark, and copyright needs. You can find us at gearhartlaw.com and contact us for a free consultation. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.